Want to virtualize your biggest workloads? Bring the performance of cloud computing inside your data center with the only server built from the cloud up.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of TechNet Radio in our Hyper-V from a VMware admin's perspective. Back with us today, I have Andy Serwich. Hey, Andy, how's it going?
Good. How you doing, Keith?
Great. Well, thanks again for joining us today.
Yeah, not a problem. My pleasure.
So before we get started, Andy, could you give everyone a brief overview of your background, a brief introduction, just in case there's people out there that haven't met you yet?
Sure. As I said in the previous episodes, my name is Andy Serwich, and I'm a virtual systems administrator with the Trivalent Group. Trivalent Group is a services provider based in the West Michigan area around a little town called Grand Rapids. And Trivalent provides products and services that allow our customers to manage, access, protect, and store their data. That's done via a number of different ways. We've got professional services offerings. We've got managed services. We've got cloud and co-location. And we provide some ISP services, too. So we've kind of the one-stop shop for the things that our customers need. And for my chair, being a virtual systems administrator, I spend a lot of time working with hypervisors all day, every day. It's a lot of what I do. So I kind of primarily started over on the VMware side back in the 3.0, 3.5 days, kind of before they did the ESXi split off. And since the last 2 years or so, started getting into Hyper-V as that product has matured, and really loving every minute of it.
Oh, wow. That's great to hear. So Andy, as you've gone through your comparison, exploration of Hyper-V and VMware, what are some of the top areas that you've seen that perhaps VMware IT pros might be a little bit confused about because of the difference in maybe terminology or whatnot that we haven't already covered in our series yet?
I think one thing that I get a lot of questions on, actually I had a question on this last week from a fellow I work with, is the virtual networking in Hyper-V. If we could maybe do just an overview of the virtual networking, I think that would be helpful.
Yeah, that's a great idea. And I agree, there's lots of different pieces of it.
Yep.
And at first, it can seem a little overwhelming. But much like in the VMware family, there's the ability to define trunking or teaming in our case.
Yep.
To bond together interfaces. We have that support. And then when you're bringing those network teams into the virtual world for creating virtual switches, and much like VMware has standard vSwitches in vSphere Standard Edition and vSphere Enterprise, where you configure the switches on a host-by-host basis, mm-hmm. as well as the distributed switch support that vSphere Enterprise Plus has. We have that, we call it logical switches. We have that when you add into the mix Virtual Machine Manager out of our System Center 2012 R2 product family. So we've got kind of a blend of virtual networking solutions.
Yep.
If you're starting off in a smaller environment, you can take advantage of the core networking and virtual networking that we have built right in to Server 2012, R2, and Hyper-V around network teaming and standard switches and VLAN support. And then if you're in a more extensive enterprise network where you need the ability to define your switches up front once and push that standard configuration out to a variety of different hosts, we have the logical switch support in VMM.
Mm-hmm.
Are you seeing, in working with IT pros out in the field yourself, Andy, as well as within your own organization, do you see more of an emphasis on one aspect of virtual networking versus others, or particular interest areas that have piqued a lot of interest from IT pros?
Well, I think you kind of mentioned the standard switching, on a per host basis, and then you went into the logical switching. I think what we see is as businesses grow, they kind of start out on the standard switch side where you're configuring it on a per-host basis. Then as they grow, they kind of expand into that logical switch mentality where it's just simpler from a management perspective to go that route. Yep. And you mentioned teaming. The other thing that I see that tends to cause a little bit of confusion is on the teaming side in VMware, you know, VMware is just a hypervisor. It doesn't do anything else. Whereas on the Hyper-V side, a lot of people kind of think that the teaming is specific to Hyper-V. Well, really, it's for the whole OS. It's the entire Server 2012, 2012 R2 OS. So even if you're running workloads other than Hyper-V, you gain that NIC teaming benefit for your services. So I always like to point that out, too, because that tends to cause a little bit of confusion from the folks I've talked to.
No, that's a great point, actually. Yeah, so regardless of physical workloads that you might be running on a Windows Server 2012 R2 box, you can take advantage of NIC teaming at a physical host level.
Yep.
And then as you're virtualizing some of those workloads using Windows Server 2012 R2 as your guest OS,
yep,
you also have the ability to do NIC teaming from within a virtual machine as well and have the ability to extend that resiliency and that increased bandwidth that NIC teaming provides all the way up to guests.
Yep, gives you a lot of flexibility there.
Yep, definitely. The other area that I'm hearing quite a bit of interest in evaluating and investigating further at this point from a lot of IT pros is around network virtualization, both on the Hyper-V and the VMware side. Are you hearing a lot of initial interest around network virtualization as well?
A little bit, yeah. I think a lot of it's lost in the definition. I think a lot of folks don't truly know what the definition is because it's such a broad thing, you know. But definitely there is a lot of interest and, you know, a lot of folks are trying to get a little bit more information out of that definition. Absolutely.
Yeah, definitely. And in the industry, you might also hear network virtualization called by several different names, which as well, you know, you might hear it called software defined networking, well as network virtualization. And regardless, really the underlying premise of it is to provide the ability to virtualize an IP subnet or set of IP subnet environments on top of a physical network infrastructure so that you can do some creative things like be able to do layer 3 routing between subnets right from within the virtualization hosts if you have virtual machines on different subnets on the same host. That becomes more important as we see a lot of environments scaling up the number of VMs per host. We see more and more traffic, VM to VM, actually flowing right through that same host and not even hitting physical network devices anymore. So being able to extend more of that intelligence into the host is really important.
Right.
And then also for being able to do things like stretching IP subnets across a couple different locations using virtualized subnets on top of your physical infrastructure, or being able to do things like move portions of your network address space to a hosting provider or a cloud provider without having to re-IP everything, because we know how painful re-IPing all of our various VMs can be.
Yeah. And one of the things I get really excited about when we start talking about Hyper-V and the virtual networking is really a lot of that functionality is baked right into the Hyper-V extensible switch. You know, I start having this conversation with a lot of people and I say, you know what, just do yourself a favor and go read the TechNet article on the Hyper-V extensible switch. You know, there's a lot of really cool stuff there. Absolutely.
Yeah, definitely. And that's a great point that in Server 2012 R2, Hyper-V, we've got a lot of the foundational components for being able to deliver network virtualization through our Hyper-V network virtualization stack based on the NVGRE protocol that we've released as a kind of an open draft standard through the IEEE at this point. But we've got the ability to have that core functionality, as you mentioned, built right into the Hyper-V switch, the extensible switch. And then from a management standpoint, using the same System Center VMM tools that we were talking about earlier for managing logical switches across multiple hosts, that also has the ability to manage network virtualization or software-defined networking across those hosts should we choose to use it. So unlike some of the competing technologies in the other guy's stack, where you have to buy more and more products to have more and more functionality, we've kind of grouped everything together so that as you start deploying your virtualized environment, you can choose which components make sense to light up initially and then grow into those other components without necessarily having to buy additional software licenses along the way.
I see that. I see a lot of folks run into that where it's like they spec out their environment, they run it for a couple years, and then they see this nice flashy new feature and, hey, that would be really good to fix problem X and Y, and yeah, let's go set it up, and oh, I got to upgrade my licenses. Now you're having a conversation with management, you're having a conversation with the bean counters, it turns into this big convoluted mess, and it just takes a lot more time to implement it.
Definitely. Well, we've talked about a bunch of different networking features related to virtualization using Hyper-V so far, Andy. We talked about NIC teaming and VLANs and standard V switches and logical switches and network virtualization. Does it make sense to maybe jump over to our lab and show everyone how some of these features can be leveraged really quickly and easily on Hyper-V?
Yeah, sounds good.
Okay, great. Well, I'll meet you over in the lab. Well, Andy, here we are in our lab, and we're looking at one of our management servers with the Windows Server 2012 R2 Server Manager tool up and running. We're looking at the health check view that allows me to easily see across all my Windows servers the health and status of my key roles. I use Server Manager all the time. Andy, do you use Server Manager quite a bit as well?
Just about every day. If I haven't looked at the screen once a day, my routine's way off. it's a great single pane of glass view. I mean, if there's something wrong, it's going to yell at you right here on the screen.
Yeah, and I continually am surprised when I talk with IT pros that they're not leveraging it. I mean, it can manage up to 100 Windows Server instances, whether they're physical, virtual, or even up in the cloud, running across a site-to-site connection in Azure. Great tool. So we see here in our lab, we've got, 9 Hyper-V hosts today, and everything looks good. Everything looks green. Now, our topic today is networking, right? So the first thing we want to do is probably start out down at the physical layer of networking and talk about how we can create some of those NIC teams that we mentioned a little earlier. So in Server Manager, I'm just going to move over to my All Servers view. And that'll give me an enumeration of all my various servers, not just my Hyper-V hosts. Or I could, if I want to see just my Hyper-V hosts, I could drill down to my Hyper-V host view. In either of these views, I can just right-click on whichever server that I wanted to configure NIC teaming for. And we've got a built-in GUI tool that plugs right into Server Manager called the NIC Teaming Wizard. Just click on Configure NIC Teaming. And remotely over the network, I'm going to set up a team of NICs. Now, of course, when we're doing any NIC teaming configuration on any platform remotely, we need to make sure that we're not pulling the rug out from underneath ourselves. So I'm actually connected to my host on its management NIC right now that we see under the adapters and interfaces area. And then I've got a couple NICs that I've already installed and named, with VMNet 01 and 02 and Data Center Net 01 and 02 that we can use for our built-in NIC teaming. One of the other surprising facts of Windows Server and NIC teaming is I find a lot of people don't realize how big these teams can get. I mean, if correct me if I'm wrong, Abe, we can go up to 32 NICs in a single NIC team at a physical host level. And
that sounds about right.
Yeah, and those individual NICs could be 1 gig or 10 gig NICs like we have in our lab environment. They could be 40 gig NICs. Think about the amount of bandwidth that we can have piping into our scaled-up Hyper-V hosts with that.
No, I'm sensing a trend with the 2012 and 2012 R2 Hyper-V and even just the server stuff. It scales to ridiculous sizes. It really does.
Our goal, that's a great point. Our goal with scalability was allowing you to scale up or scale out beyond any practical limits that you may have. Take all the artificial hardware limits away and allow you to scale up or scale out really to your heart's content. Really high limits on all of this. And so we can have up to 32 NICs per team, and we can have up to 32 teams on one individual physical server. So again, lots of ways of being able to team our VM traffic, team our data center traffic. If we want to split out storage or backup or live migration traffic, we can do that over all these various teams. Now, in our conversation earlier in the episode, we also mentioned teaming inside of a virtual machine, NIC teaming inside of a virtual machine, and we can do that. However, inside of a VM, we can only team two NICs together into a single team. We can still create multiple teams, but only two NICs per team. But that's okay, because those VM NICs that are teamed together inside the VM could be passing through a vSwitch to a much larger physical team. So we can still get lots of traffic in and out of those VMs and provide some network fault tolerance to those VMs at the same time.
Yep.
So let's set up a couple teams. So why don't we set up, what do you say, Andy? We want to set up our VM team first for our virtual machines?
Makes sense. The VM's got to talk.
So I'm going to, over in my list of network adapters, I'm just going to shift-click and select my two VMNet adapters. And then up on my tasks menu, I'm going to add them to a new team. And we'll call this the VM team. And under additional properties, that's where I go to set up more advanced configurations for this team. So for teaming mode, for load balancing across my traffic across the active adapters in my team, I've got choices that I can select for switch independent or switch dependent. I can support static teaming. I can support LACP dynamic teaming if need be. I can also select load balancing modes like dynamic load balancing or address hashing and really be able to fine-tune teaming to the pattern of my network traffic. Now, if we were doing this at a Windows Server 2012 R2 host level and setting up our teaming, typically what we do is select switch independent and dynamic teaming, the default values, and go ahead and click OK. So I'm just going to click OK and set up my first team. And you'll see that team come up over in my teams list. And initially, it'll come up as a warning because it takes a few moments for it to go through and make sure that each of the network adapters have a valid link into the team and or a valid link into their adapter from the physical network and all is well. So we'll see that go back to an OK status in a few moments. While we're doing that, though, let's create another team for our backend data center traffic coming out of our hosts. So I'm just going to go up and select my second DCNet 01 and DCNet 02 adapters. And I'm going to add them to a new team for all my backend traffic, storage traffic, my management traffic, my backup traffic, all that stuff at a host level. So we'll call this the DC team.
What's really nice about the NIC teaming features here is it used to be such a chore to get a NIC team set up. You either had to use some sort of third-party driver set, you know, usually from HP or Dell, and those drivers were historically problematic, or you had to set up some sort of ether channel with your switch infrastructure, and if someone came along and accidentally removed one of those cables, it could take the whole team down. You know, it was just this big, long, arduous process, and Microsoft has really done a good job of taking all the mystery out of that.
Yep, definitely. I agree. So we've got both of our teams created now over in our virtual machine traffic and our backend data center traffic. Both are in an okay state, so the links came up on all of the Ethernet adapters in each of those teams. One thing that I get quite frequently on the data center team side is a lot of people ask, okay, we've got these physical hosts, they're connected to my data center backend network, but my data center backend network might actually have multiple types of backend traffic that these hosts need to communicate. It might be storage traffic, cluster traffic, live migration traffic, backup traffic, and whatnot. How do I split all of that out? And one of the little known facts of NIC teaming is that not only can we bond multiple physical NICs together, but if we select one of those teams, like our data center team, we can go over to our Team Interfaces tab and actually create multiple virtualized team interfaces right off this single team that are on separate VLANs. So if we're using VLANs in our data center to segment that traffic, we can split it out and have a storage interface, a backup interface, a live migration interface. And all we'd need to do for each of those VLANs is just add a separate team interface into our team. So we'll say let's add a new team interface for our live migration traffic, for instance, and then specify the specific VLAN at our network switch level that we wish to have all of that traffic tagged with. So we'll say maybe that's going over VLAN 2, for instance, on our backend data center. And you'll see now we've got another team interface that'll look like another network interface in our network adapters list on this host. It gets its own IP address that's valid for that VLAN. So what we're doing is we're doing VLAN segregation. We're splitting out those VLANs that are coming across a consolidated team of physical interfaces into multiple team interfaces. And we can create additional team interfaces for all of the other backend traffic as well. When we look at the server, what we'd see in its network adapter list is a separate team interface under its network adapters that we can IP individually. Does that make sense from your standpoint, Andy? Are you seeing a lot of that type of stuff going on in your data center or other data centers?
We're starting to see a little bit of planning revolving around that. Really, the big benefit I see there is starting to see this trend of people not buying as many, you know, maybe 1 gig NICs, spending a little bit more money and getting lesser number of 10 gig NICs, and then just setting up multiple VLANs. You know, it becomes a little bit more efficient, and it's honestly it's a little bit easier to manage, especially for the guy that's doing the cabling as well. He always appreciates less cables running around for sure.
Yep, definitely. So I'm just gonna go ahead and create a couple more data center VLANs, maybe for our cluster traffic, for instance. We'll say that that's on VLAN 3, and we'll say backup traffic, if we want to put that on its own VLAN, for VLAN 4, for instance, whatever VLANs we're using in our data center. And we've got the ability to easily just segregate that traffic out, split it out right at a host level without doing anything fancy. All of this stuff, as you'd mentioned, is all related to NIC teaming that we can use on any server, whether it's any physical server, whether it's running Hyper-V or not. Now, as I'm going through this, the next question a lot of people ask is, well, I also have an environment where the VMs that are communicating across my VM team, I want to be able to put them on separate VLANs. How do I do that? And we don't want to do that here inside NIC teaming. Instead, we'd want to do that piece through the vSwitch that we set up for those VMs to communicate at a Hyper-V level. So it's Hyper-V aware, and we can vary those VLANs as needed on a virtual machine by virtual machine basis. Well, Andy, what do you say? Does it make sense now that we've got our physical network infrastructure set up on our host to switch gears and look at setting up our vSwitch and how VLAN tagging works at the vSwitch level?
Yeah, sounds good.
Okay, great. Well, so what I'm going to do is I'm just going to close down my NIC teaming tool, close that down, and we're back in Server Manager on the same list of Hyper-V hosts that we were on before. And to configure our virtual switches on this Hyper-V host, now remember we're talking about standard switches at this point that are configured on a host-by-host level. What I do to configure new standard switches is I just right-click on that Hyper-V host, and this time I'm going to jump into Hyper-V Manager for managing all of the Hyper-V specific settings. So I'll click on Hyper-V Manager, that'll load up, it'll automatically select the server that we had right-clicked on in Server Manager. We'll see there's no virtual machines yet running on this host, where it's a brand new host that was just provisioned. We've got its NIC teaming set up, now we need to set up virtual switches on it, at least one for our virtual machines to talk through once they're provisioned. So in order to do that, over under Actions, I'm going to click on Virtual Switch Manager, and I'm going to create a new vSwitch, new standard vSwitch. Now in Hyper-V, when we create a new standard vSwitch, we're given three choices. We can create an external vSwitch that talks through a physical network adapter or a team of physical network adapters like we have to allow virtual machines to communicate to the production data center that's outside of our host. That's the most common choice for providing access to virtual machines for communicating across the production network. However, we also have two other choices, internal and private. Those are great for lab environments or test environments because what they do is they help to isolate the VMs that are on those vSwitches away from your production network. If I create a vSwitch as an internal vSwitch, virtual machines that are connected to that vSwitch will only be able to communicate amongst themselves and down to the host that they're running on, but not through the host out to the production network. And if I create a private vSwitch, it goes takes isolation one level further, where VMs that are attached to a private vSwitch can only communicate amongst themselves. They can't communicate down to the physical host or to the production network. So it's even more isolated than internal. Well, what I see, Andy, is external being the most common choice in most cases, because a lot of times we want to give VMs certainly access to the production network so they can communicate with workstation with end users sitting at their workstations. And internal and private, commonly I see used for test scenarios or lab scenarios. Do you see any other reasons for using internal or private based on what you've seen in out in the field?
No, I think, as you said, primarily I've seen internal and private used just for test purposes, while external is going to be what you use in 95% of cases. You know, for testing purposes, especially when you're testing some network utilities, something that's going to start sending packets across the whole network, a good use case of I've seen of the private virtual switch type or even the internal one is where I've seen guys set up like a firewall VM mm-hmm. with one external connection, you know, one VNIC on the external vSwitch and one vSwitch on like an internal or private. Yep. And then inside that intranet, you're essentially creating an intranet. Then they'll start testing out their network utility. Sure. You know, that way it's not messing with anything on the production network. That's kind of the use case I've seen most common for those recently.
Oh, that's interesting. Okay. Well, let's go ahead and create an external vSwitch that connects to that we can use to connect VMs to that VMNet team that we just set up a few moments ago. So I'm going to select external as our vSwitch type. I'll click on Create Virtual Switch, and we'll give our virtual switch a name. So let's just call this VM Switch. And for external network, we'd want to select one of the network adapters that we had previously set up, either a physical adapter or a team. So we just set up a team on that host, and that's going to come up as a network adapter multiplexer driver. That's a driver name that's used for teams. So it's the first team that we set up on that host, so we'll select the first driver. This way, our vSwitch will communicate down through that team. For external vSwitches, we also have the ability to allow the host itself to have access to communicate through this vSwitch if we wanted to use a single interface, both for VMs as well as host management. In our case, we're not. We have that separate management interface that we saw earlier when we were setting up our NIC teaming. But if we were, we could check allow management operating system to share this vSwitch and then specify if we wanted to route our management traffic over a particular VLAN out of this host, we'd specify the VLAN ID just for the management traffic. Now, in our case, again, we're not doing that in our scenario, but that capability is there. One thing to be careful of is that this VLAN ID that we specify here is not for virtual machine traffic on this vSwitch. It's purely for host-level traffic, management traffic, that the host is routing through its virtual network adapter on this vSwitch if we check this box to allow the management operating system to share that that vSwitch. Does that make sense from your standpoint, Andy? Do you see any other issues or tips that you've run into in the field?
No, I think you covered it pretty well. That's usually the use case I see as well.
Okay, great. So I'm just going to click OK, and I'm going to create that new VM switch. It's going to go through the process of applying changes, and now we've got that new switch set up that we can build VMs and connect them to. So if I go through the process of provisioning a new virtual machine right from within Hyper-V Manager, I can actually step through the process of seeing that that new vSwitch. So we'll give our new virtual machine a name. So say it's new VM01. And as we step through the process of giving it memory and disk resources and whatnot, we'll see that new vSwitch that we just created in our list as where we want to connect that new virtual machine too. So I just go ahead and finish up provisioning this new VM. So now we've got our new VM with one network adapter on that particular vSwitch. If I jump into the settings of this virtual machine, one area that I wanted to show is where we set up those VLAN IDs for virtual machine network traffic. what we do is for virtual machines, if we wanted to have their network traffic going over a particular VLAN, we'd expand out in the virtual machine hardware settings the network adapter, and you'll see that we have the ability to tag virtual machine traffic going over each independent virtual network adapter on a particular VLAN. So if we wanted to make sure that this VM had all of its traffic pre-tagged to go out VLAN 5, just specify it there, VLAN 5. Does that make sense from your standpoint, Andy? Anything else to add?
No, that sounds good.
Well, great. Now, while we're here, I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say that's useful stuff to be able to do it there. That way you don't have to really worry about it anywhere else, like actually inside the VM or anything like that. So just handling it all at the VM level, takes a lot of the mystery out of it.
Yep, definitely, definitely. And while we're here, in addition to tagging our VLAN ID, we also have other advanced properties that we can enable on a virtual network adapter by virtual network adapter basis, like bandwidth management. So we can specify rate limits, minimum and maximum network bandwidth that this VM can send through this virtual network adapter to try to keep our chatty VMs away from the VMs that really need that type of support. Under hardware acceleration, we've got the ability, if our hardware supports it, we've got the ability to take advantage of advanced offloading, like virtual machine queuing, IPsec task offloading, if we're doing network layer encryption, single root I/O virtualization. And under advanced features, well, we can enable things like MAC address spoofing. So if we're doing load balancing across multiple VMs using our built-in network load balancing support, most load balancing requires some form of address spoofing to be allowed, so we can enable that. We can also enable some security mechanisms like DHCP guard and router guard that make sure that prevents someone from being able to spin up a DHCP service or a router inside this VM. I see those options being really popular with universities that are providing virtual machine access to students on a student network. They want to prevent their students from setting up rogue DHCP servers or routers in their network that can route traffic or give incorrect IP addresses out and cause all sorts of havoc. So all those features are all built IT, in.
IT pros that are learning don't always know what the implications of their actions are, right?
That's right. That's right. We do have, you had mentioned a couple scenarios around port mirroring when we were talking about internal and private VLANs, and we do have the ability to turn on port mirroring. And we had mentioned a little earlier that we can do NIC teaming inside of our VMs. If we added multiple virtual network adapters, perhaps one to one switch and one to another vSwitch, we can actually tell Hyper-V to be aware that those two NICs are part of a team by checking the enable this network adapter to be part of a team in the guest operating system. So it gives us some really cool, easy to implement, pretty advanced choices for virtual network adapters and standard vSwitches right from within Hyper-V. What do you think, Andy? Anything else to add? Should we take a look maybe next at Virtual Machine Manager, or is there something else that you like to show everybody around our core networking settings?
Yeah, I think that's the next logical step. Like I said, at least from my perspective, I see people start with the standard switches, and then as the organization grows, they have a need to be able to have even more flexibility than you already have with just the core features. So yeah, I think that makes sense to see what System Center brings to the table.
Okay, great. Well, let's switch over to System Center Virtual Machine Manager in our lab environment, and should be coming up on your screen now. And we should be looking at the Virtual Machine Manager console. And within the console, we've talked a little bit about Virtual Machine Manager throughout our series. We've got these various workspaces in our Virtual Machine Manager console for configuring our underlying virtualization fabric, network fabric, and storage fabric, for managing and supporting VMs and services on that fabric, for working with libraries of templates, whether they're VM templates or multi-VM, multi-tiered application service templates. We've got the ability to monitor jobs for provisioning and managing our environment, and then overall settings. Well, in our virtual machine manager environment, in the in the VMware world, you can think of this as our alternative to vCenter that allows us to do management across multiple hypervisor hosts, but also fold in network device management, storage management as well. In our virtual machine manager environment, when we're configuring networking in virtual machine manager, we'd want to be in our fabric workspace because networking is part of our underlying fabric that we'll use for deploying new virtual machine workloads. When we click on networking, you'll see that there's lots of different opportunities, lots of flexibility that virtual machine manager provides around configuring virtual networking scenarios. And the immediate feedback that I get from a lot of IT pros that are more familiar with the VMware side of things is that, wow, that looks really complex. We've got all these different things that we need to configure. And what I tell them is that we don't actually need to configure all of these things. Really think of it as VMM providing the flexibility, a very flexible, extensible tool set around virtual networking. And for your specific scenario, you may be using just two or three or one portion of this overall tool set in your environment. Logical switches, or what VMware calls distributed switches, switch definitions that we can deploy to multiple hosts, multiple virtualization hosts, are a really common scenario with VMM. And we don't have to configure all this stuff in order to just take advantage of logical switches. Does that make sense from your standpoint, Andy? What feedback and reactions are you seeing out in the community from IT pros as you talk about virtual networking with VMM?
Yeah, I'm kind of seeing the same thing. You know, people look at that list and they're like, whoa, you know, I'm not even sure what I have to do with some of those. But, you know, like you said, it's really common to only need, you know, one or two of those. It's really kind of an a la carte thing is kind of the way I describe it. Everyone's going to have their own unique situation. And, you know, what I need might be different from what you need. You know, it's just kind of depends on your situation. And Hyper-V and System Center really provides that flexibility for you to manage really any situation that you could even conceive of. So...
Yep, definitely. Well, let's step through a basic scenario to get started. And really, when we're starting off in the basic scenarios, there's only a couple components, as we mentioned, that we need to use to get started. We've got logical networks. Logical networks are used to map our VLANs and our IP address space that we have in our physical network environment in our data centers into a set of names. And that's actually kind of cool because it gives us the ability to manage and take advantage of those various subnets and VLANs without always having to remember a particular VLAN ID or IP subnet every time we're provisioning new workloads in our environment. So we'll want to configure at least one logical network that informs VMM how our data center network is kind of mapped out. And then we've also got this concept of port profiles. Port profiles allow us to build something called an uplink profile. The uplink profile allows us to specify how our virtualization hosts should connect physically into that logical network through a teamed interface or through a standalone interface. We can configure NIC teaming properties as part of this, and when we push it out to our hosts, have it automatically actually build the teams for us. And then the last piece is actually logical switches. And then logical switches allow us to bring together that definition of our logical networks and our uplink port profiles, along with any QoS information that we may want to leverage for prioritizing traffic or controlling bandwidth, into a single definition that we can then assign to each of our virtualization hosts. Well, Andy, what do you think? Does it make sense to create a new logical network, step through the process, create a new logical network, a new uplink profile, a new logical switch?
Yeah, sounds good.
Okay. Well, let's start off with logical networks then. So I'm going to right-click on logical networks. I'm going to create a new logical network. I need to give it a name. So let's create a logical network that will ultimately attach to our virtual machine networks, much like the team that it'll basically configure a team like we had in a vSwitch like we had on the standard side, but in more of a centralized definition like we did earlier. So I'm going to call this the VM logical network. And you'll see we've got several choices for building this logical network. We can have it set up as just one connected network where we've got a bunch of IP subnets, VLAN or not VLAN, that are all routable amongst each other. That's one of the most common scenarios I see in most data center environments. That's why it's selected as the default. But if we're using VLANs for isolation purposes, to isolate traffic between maybe different collections of virtual machines or isolate traffic in our data center, we can also set up logical networks for VLAN independent networks where each VLAN we don't assume is routable back and forth, and they're considered to be a set of isolated networks. We can also use private VLANs. We can use private VLANs to take a set of VLANs and further segment them, where we've got each of the virtual machines off on their own isolated ports, only being able to communicate back to perhaps community devices within that VLAN, like routers or default gateways or whatnot. So we'll set up one connected network. It's the most common situation. And you'll notice that we also have a checkbox option for network virtualization, that software-defined networking that we talked about a little earlier, that we could optionally enable if we wanted to take advantage of that built-in network virtualization. In our case, we're going to keep things really simple. We get started. We're going to leave it at one connected network. I'm going to click the next button. And now it's going to ask me for a list of network sites. So this logical network could cross multiple data center boundaries. And for each of those, I can add in a particular logical site name. So I can say maybe I'm in Columbus today and I want to create a logical network for my Columbus site. I'll call it my VM Columbus network. And then I can insert into this site one or more IP subnets. And if I'm using VLAN IDs, I can specify the VLAN IDs right here. That way, down the road, I don't have to remember what those VLAN IDs are. I have it associated already with my site. So I'm going to insert a row and specify my first subnet here. So we'll say this is 10.1.0.0 slash 16 mask. And for our VLAN, we'll leave it at the default VLAN for that subnet, and then I'll put in another subnet, 10.2.0.0/16 mask, and we'll specify an alternate VLAN for that one. And I could keep going, adding additional IP subnets and VLANs in as it makes sense. Well, I'm going to stop here with my subnets and VLANs, click Next, click Finish, and it'll go through the process of dispatching out my job to create that new logical network definition. We'll see that it's created. I'll go ahead and close the window. Here's my new logical network. So now I've defined what my physical network looks like from a VMM perspective. And I could go further and even create pools of IP addresses or MAC addresses that VMM is going to dole out to devices or virtual machines that are attached to this logical network. But for now, we'll just leave it there. And we'll go over and create our second component, our uplink port profile. So the port profile, as we mentioned a little earlier, is going to tell VMM how it should connect the virtualization hosts into this logical network. So I'll create a new port profile, and we'll call this our VM Columbus uplink port profile. We'll say that's an uplink profile, and then we'll specify if we want to use teaming. We'll specify the load balancing algorithm and the teaming mode here so that it will automatically be in place with the configuration as we assign this to a logical switch and as we assign that logical switch to hosts. So I'll go ahead and click Next. It'll ask, well, where am I associating this uplink port profile to? And we'll say that hosts that are using this profile will be getting connected to our Columbus logical network. And I'll go ahead and click Next, Finish, and in just a few seconds, there we go, our uplink port profile is created. So now, we've got our first two pieces, our logical network and our port profile created. Now we'll go over to logical switches, and we'll create a logical switch. I'm just going to step through the process of creating our VM Columbus switch that we'll use for all of our Columbus hosts, and step through the process. If I have... Andy, you were talking a little earlier about Hyper-V extensible switches and how we can add additional extensions into the Hyper-V logical switch. If we add extensions, we could add them in right here. We can specify how we want these hosts connected. So we'll say, yes, we want them teamed. And for the teaming configuration, we're going to use that Columbus uplink port profile that we just created. And then under virtual ports, we can add in additional classifications for other types of traffic that we're routing through this virtual switch. We can create our own port classifications and port profiles that specify bandwidth limits and QoS settings, or we can use the defaults. You'll see there's several defaults that are here already for host management traffic, for high bandwidth and low bandwidth and medium bandwidth traffic. So we can customize those defaults quite easily. They're all customized right over in our port profiles area, same place that we created our uplink port profile. I'll add a couple in here. So I'll say that we're going to have a mix of VMs, some that are using, that we want to be able to assign low bandwidth to. So we'll set up one classification for low bandwidth, and we'll add another classification for high bandwidth. And I'll associate that with our high bandwidth adapter inside the virtual switch. And we're good to go. Go ahead and click finish. Our two classifications and port profiles are bound to that virtual switch now. And our virtual switch itself, our new logical switch, is created. Now, as I mentioned, if you wanted to customize or add any additional port profiles or port classifications in, if you wanted to go in maybe and change what high bandwidth was from a bandwidth setting standpoint, you can go into your port profiles and be able to very easily adjust those minimum, maximum, and weighting criteria. What I usually recommend, though, is start off with the defaults that are already in place for prioritizing your traffic and see how they work in your environment and for your scenarios. And then only start modifying them if you see that you need to tweak them a little bit. A lot of these defaults have been already pretty intelligently set up. Well, yeah. What do you say, Andy? Is there anything else that you wanted to bring out about logical switches or port classifications or uplink profiles?
Yeah, these port profiles. I was just going to say, I from what I've found, 98% of use cases are covered usually by one of the existing defaults. Like you said, the defaults are really, really good.
Yep, definitely, definitely. Thanks for sharing that. And then in addition, so now we've got our logical switch that's bound to our logical network, our uplink port profile, we've got our QoS settings all as one definition, this VM Columbus switch definition, that we can now assign to multiple hosts, whether they're standalone hosts or clustered. And what I can do to assign that is you just go over to my servers fabric and drill down into my hosts. And if I wanted to assign that logical switch, all I'd have to do, let me just find particular host that we can assign that to. Here's our HVO5 host. I can just right click, go into the properties of that host, and then under virtual switches, I can add in my new virtual switch. Now you'll see that the previous standard switch that we had set up on this host still comes through. That goes back to your point a little earlier, Andy, about customers wanting to start off perhaps in a smaller environment with standard V switches. And then as they move to VMM, well, they can still leverage those standard vSwitches. VMM still sees them when you bring that host into VMM. But for new vSwitches that you're deploying using logical switches, you just add in that logical switch, specify which one you want to use. We'll use our Columbus vSwitch. And then specify the particular physical adapters that you wish to team together using your uplink port profile. Once we've got that done, we click OK, boom, our logical switch is in place. It's going to build the team for us. It's going to create the switch. It's going to associate the appropriate QoS settings with the switch and activate it so that we can now deploy new virtual machines on top of that switch. Anything to add, Andy?
No, I think you covered it pretty well. Really, this takes on a lot of the work of having to create those standard switches on each individual host. When you start getting into a situation where you've got 5, 10, 15 hosts, this really saves you a lot of time, and it takes the human factor out of the equation as well, where you run into situations where this standard switch may be just a little bit configured just a little bit differently than this standard switch over here. And then, hey, you find out that you can't live migrate VMs between hosts. Really takes that human factor out. So that's always a plus as well.
Yep, definitely. I agree. Well, Andy, I think we're done in the lab. Let's head back to the office and finish up our episode.
Sounds good.
Well, Andy, today in our lab, we walked through a ton of information. We went from managing networking on an individual Hyper-V host through the native Windows Server 2012 R2 management tools for building a NIC team, so doing VLAN separation, building a standard vSwitch, looking at the network properties of our virtual machines for VLAN IDs and advanced bandwidth and networking properties. And then we moved into a larger environment where we're using Virtual Machine Manager in System Center 2012 R2 to centralize the definition of a lot of that, and also potentially down the road grow into an environment where we're using network virtualization, software-defined networking, to virtualize our IP subnets on top of our physical network infrastructure. Well, Andy, I wanted to thank you for joining us today and sharing your input.
Yeah, not a problem. Appreciate it. And, you know, like you said, we covered a lot of stuff in this episode. And I really just want folks to know that don't be intimidated by just the sheer amount, but really, it's a benefit to you just because of the sheer flexibility the Hyper-V offers and its network virtualization offerings.
Yep, definitely. And to try this out for yourself, we've got some great resources down at the bottom of the page. We've got a guided lab to get you started, steps you through the process of configuring virtual networking with logical switches, logical networks, port profiles, all that stuff, step by step. And then out on our TechNet Virtual Labs environment, we actually have virtualized kind of live lab environments where you can step through it yourself, play around with some of the more advanced features, and be able to tear it down and bring it back up and troubleshoot it and all that good stuff. So be sure to take advantage of those resources as a next step. That's a great way to learn more about virtual networking in Hyper-V and in System Center 2012 R2. Thank you so much, everyone, for joining us today on our networking episode of Hyper-V from a VMware admin's perspective. Look forward to seeing you in a future episode of TechNet Radio. Thanks, everybody. Have a great rest of your day.
Thanks, everyone. See you later.